It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I'm delighted to be joined by the hosts of the brilliant Wish I'd Known Then podcast series and two brilliant writers in their own right, Sarah Rosette and Jamie Albright. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. We're happy to be here. Oh, we are.
Thank you very much for joining me. I was fortunate enough to be a guest on your show not long ago. We had a great chat. Could have spoken for a lot longer, I'm sure. And that's why we decided to hook up again. Really good interests that we've never covered on the show before. Sarah, I understand that you've written a book on how to write a series. We've never covered writing series. And like, fantasy is obsessed with like mega long series. Yeah, it sounds perfect. And Jamie, you are a bit of a whiz on the marketing front, especially for book launches. No, we are going to talk all about that today. But to start with, it'd be nice for you to both introduce yourselves to any listeners who may be unfamiliar with you and your work. Who'd like to go first?
I'll go. I write mysteries. I'm writing a 1920s historical mystery. I've always loved mysteries, and that's kind of where I spent my whole career. I started out in cozy mystery. I just enjoy the puzzle aspect of it. And my books now are more reminiscent of like a Agatha Christie type whodunit set in the past in England. They're usually country house mysteries. And I've done a couple of spinoffs. I've done some other series that are like cozy adjacent, I guess you'd say. I have a travel mystery series that's cozy adjacent. So my book that I wrote was like everything that I learned about writing a series, I put into the book so that other people wouldn't have to figure all this stuff out on their own, hopefully. And I live in Texas. I'm married. I have two grown kids. I like to watch K-dramas and Jane Austen adaptations. And that's about it. It's really hot here, so we spend a lot of time indoors. So watching TV is a great hobby.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Jamie Albright, and I write small-town Texas rom-coms. I have two different series. One is a Runaway Bride series, and the other is just a small town, set in a small town sports rom-com. I also do author consulting, and I lead some workshops. And yeah, I actually like to watch British mysteries. That's kind of my thing. I don't write them, and I probably never would, because I don't think I'm smart enough to do that. But those are the things I like. I'm married. I'm from Texas too. We both live in Houston, and we've been doing the podcast for about 5 years now?
We started in 2020.
Yeah.
And accidentally.
Accidentally in 2020. And then, yeah, I'm a mom, got grown kids, and I have six grandkids. So, yeah.
Oh, very
a lot going on. Yeah.
And it both writing genres, which have had a nice bit of a spike of popularity over the last few years. How have you found sort of the romance is probably the most popular genre at the moment. Cozy Mysteries, a massive spike as well. Especially I really what was like Richard Osman's books are would you say they're like cozy mysteries, or are they?
I think they have the tone of a cozy mystery. Some of the elements are not quite, but I think a cozy reader would enjoy them. So they're not, if you read that and then you go looking for something exactly like it, you're probably not going to find it. I feel like it's one of those that kind of pulls in a bunch of different elements. So it appeals to a really broad spectrum of people, but the tone is very cozy.
Nice. I mean, what
So
one
it's interesting because what Sarah writes now is different from Cozy's. It's still a mystery and it's still. What's the word I'm looking for?
It's more.
It's a gentler kind of mystery, but it's not cozy. Yeah, it's a.
There's like, you know how every genre, once you get kind of down in the weeds, it gets very granular. And so mine, I would say, are more, they're sometimes classified as traditional mysteries. And Cozy's lately is going more towards super light, lots of cats and dogs and cooking. And I mean, that seems to be what people think of now, where in the past it was more general, you know, now it's getting more
Granular.
divided out, granular. So yeah, mine are more traditional mysteries with some
Pretty
fun
similar.
elements in them, but not as light as some cozies.
Nice. It's great, isn't it? Like how genres change and people's attitudes change. And that's why I love fantasy so much, is because you can bring in all these different things. Like romance is huge. Cozy fantasy is also huge. So it
That's
just goes to
booming.
show, yeah. So in terms of like if I was thinking, because we've got two sides, experts, both sides. I mean, we've got you both write series. But marketing generally comes after the writing's done. So I think it'd be a good place to start with the series writing. So as specialists in series books, what do you think the allure is in writing this prolonged story? I've speak to so many fantasy writers, and like especially new writers. I was one of them. It's like you don't just plan one book in your mind. You're like, oh, I'm going to write a book. You're like, I'm gonna write a 5 book series. It's like, why would you
That's
do
what
that
people do.
to yourself? So, what's the allure?
Well, I think readers love going back to a familiar place. And if you create, especially in cozy mystery and the mysteries I write, people want to escape the world and all that's going on. And so they want to go to this place that is like a cute little town. It's safe, even though there's a murder. It's a more intellectual puzzle in a lot of cozies and mysteries. And so they want to return to this place where they know the characters, they're familiar, they like the setting, the atmosphere, the tone. And then they get to see the characters change over time. You know, people fall in love and get married, and they have people, you know, that become a found family. And I think that's what draws people back a lot. Even like in Jamie's books, they're a linked series, not necessarily the same main character. Would you say it's the same in romance?
Definitely. It's in romance, the standalones in a series, which they're all set in the same place. They have the same characters weaving through it, but each book has a different hero and heroine. But people love that because they love to revisit those characters from the earlier books, but also the shared worlds, like you can branch off and have a total, like in mine, if I were to do that, I could have a totally different town, but they still come back to the other town occasionally, or people from that town come to their new town, and that's a great way to expand a series.
When I think about the series I've read and sort of raced through, probably like one of the most recent ones was a historical fiction one. And it was about this character called Aranestus of Plataea. And he was sort of like a semi-historical figure. But he was quite instrumental in the story to defeating the Persians. And you just want to, you see him grow up. And then you obviously 5 or 6 books in, you want to see this final battle with the Persians and see what happens at the end. And like you say, it's that character and that journey and that change, the development, the whole arc. It just, you're hooked so much, doesn't it?
Yeah, you
Really
really do.
invested.
You really get invested.
I mean,
Yeah,
my favorite fantasy is Game of Thrones. It's like of too many characters, probably. But
Yeah.
it's the characters that keep you invested, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And that was one thing that I had to learn over time. I was so worried, like Jamie was saying, mysteries are hard to write. And I was so worried about the plot and making it make sense and having good clues and the Mr. X. But then the thing that readers talk about is the characters. And that's what they want, especially like in mystery, if you have a romantic subplot, they really want those characters to get together, but they really don't, you know, like they like the tension, but they want them to get together. But as the author, you want to drag it out as long as you can, at least in my series. Jamie's series are different because romance is different. That would be like fighting words if they didn't
Yes,
get together at
exactly.
the
Exactly.
So what do you think is the most important element to writing a successful series of books?
I think you need to know what kind of series you want to write. And I didn't even realize there were different kinds of series when I started. I read mostly cozy because that was my favorite. And I was like, okay, I'm writing a cozy mystery. So, of course, it's a series. But I didn't think at all about future books because, you know, it was a big hurdle just to finish one book. So, when I got done with that, I was like, oh, okay, so she's got to be involved in another mystery. And with a cozy, you're dealing with an amateur sleuth. And the longer the series goes on, the harder and harder it becomes to get her involved in a mystery in a logical way. Because, you know, you might stumble across a body, but to find, you know, 5 to 10, that's like a lot. And then you're doing the, oh, well, her friend found the body, or somebody has been unjustly accused. So it just gets harder and harder. So if you can think about how you can set it up in the beginning so that you can continue the series, and it doesn't have to be mystery, like any genre, you need to figure out, is your series open-ended or is it closed? Like a flat arc character is perfect for a long-running series.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You don't really have plans to turn off anytime soon, like a Poirot, a Miss Marple,
Jack
that,
Reacher.
yeah, they kind of drop in, they do their thing, and then they go on. And it's easy to extend that because you don't have such a big character arc with them. But if you have a protagonist that's doing this huge project and they achieve their goal, then does the series end there after 2, 3, 4, 5 books? You know, if you want to continue it, you have to give them a new goal, change something. So, like, if you can figure out what structure you want to use, and certain genres lean more towards certain structures. I feel like mystery leans towards this really open-ended, flat-arced character, whereas maybe science fiction and fantasy is more like a robust arc where the character goes on this journey, completes it, and then the series ends. So I think if you can have that in mind, that helps a lot. And I think romance is similar, right?
It's
You
similar. I
kind of
think I
know.
would, yeah, I would. First of all, it's hard when you finish that book and you're like, oh, good, I finished a book. Oh, gosh, I probably need more books. And if you don't bake that into the first one, as far as characters or at least for some foreshadowing or something, it's hard then to carry it through. But I think one of the most important things in a series is having something that the readers can connect to. In a series like Sarah writes, it's the main character. It's our protagonist. In series like I write, it's the town and some of the people in the town. Like in my Bride series, I have an Aunt Honey, and Aunt Honey is in all the books, and she's very flamboyant and crazy. But also, the town itself is a character in a lot of ways. So if you write a series like a standalone in a series, or standalones in a series where you don't have that one consistent character going through, if you can create side characters that are consistent, or like I've read some books that were like a football team was the consistent thing, or like a club is the consistent thing throughout all the books, and all the characters kind of come in and out of that, but there needs to be some consistency of some kind to really tie the whole thing together.
Interesting what you say about side characters, because sometimes they can steal the show altogether.
Yeah, they can. You have to be very careful. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
So then that opens new doors then, doesn't it, for you to go and expand the
Yeah.
series in an interesting way. So
Yeah,
where do you
might
think
be.
writers go wrong when it comes to writing series? I mean, we've said the most important elements, but what do you think the biggest mistakes are? Because the last thing you want to do as a writer is commit yourself to hundreds of thousands of words only for people not to like it.
Yeah. I think sometimes if you limit, like, you need to have a world big enough that you can support a series. And whether that's like the town they live in, or maybe it's a theme you want to explore, like if you want to write about somebody who's a rare book collector or something like that, there are endless stories or art. You know, there's endless missing paintings that you could have for your theme that will run through your series. But if you make your world too small, you may explore everything in, you know, two or three books, and then you're like, man, I just don't know. It,
Right.
but you, there are ways to solve that. Like, you could bring in some new characters, you could give your protagonist a new interest or hobby that will launch them on this other new arc of things to explore. But I think that can be a problem. Can't think of any more that.
Not planning ahead. I mean, we already said that, but not really planning ahead. I think that's can be a problem. I think not sticking with the series longer than you should. You know, if you've got a couple of books out, three books out, and the series hasn't really gone anywhere, then cut your losses and start a new series. You know, that's one of the big issues. People hang on to series, I think, longer than they should.
And sometimes people do that because the series is selling and their readers want more. Hardly ever do readers say, oh no, I'm done with that. You know, if they love a series, they want more. And so you people, I know authors keep writing in the same series when they really, their heart is really not in it and they want to do something else. And so sometimes it might be better just to wrap that up and, you know, write a spin-off with one of those characters that's so interesting that hopefully your readers would follow them. I mean, you know, that's a, you know, there's a risk in doing that, but it might be better for you creatively, because if you write something that you don't like, it's going to be just drudgery.
That sound like a chore. So, in your experience and writing series, what do you think has been the best piece of advice that you've found or that you've implemented, that has made sure that you've sort of ticked all the boxes? You've done things like you said, Jamie, about like foreshadowing, making sure that you invest people in the next book.
I'm going to answer this by saying the thing that I did that I didn't do that I should have done. Don't be like me. So my Bride series, there are five books. In those five books, there's a rock star, there's a former child star, there's a millionaire, and there's a country music star. And then the DA, but you know, some pretty famous people live in this tiny small town. Well, when I was thinking about doing the next series, I created an entire new town and an entire new place in Texas, far away from my original town, so that there's no overlap at all. And I should, because I thought, well, I can't have a famous football player from this same small town. I mean, why are all these famous people flocking to this town? That was a huge mistake. I should have 100% done that because readers would have loved it. I was thinking logically and not emotionally. And emotionally, my readers would have loved that because they would get to see the other characters, even though this was a new series. So that's what I should have. I should have made the second series a spin-off of the first in one some way or another, and I didn't do that. So that's the thing you should not do. And now it's too late. I mean, I've created this entire world in the second series, and I can't change it to fix, you know, and fix it. I
Can you
just
write
have this second series. Yeah.
a third series where the two meet?
I might could because one's in North Texas, one's in South Texas. I could maybe meet them in the middle somewhere. Yeah.
Have some overlap there.
Yeah. Texas is big enough. I could do it. But yeah, that's for me. I think that had I done that, I would have seen more read through because people that read my bride's books go on to read the other series. But a lot of times, people that read the other series don't go on to read my bride's books as much. So I think I would have had more read through had I done that.
What about you, Sarah? What do you think?
Well, I would say I think I stumbled into this. I didn't read it or plan it, but in my most recent series, I decided I can't plan out like a long series. Like my brain can't handle it. Even when I'm writing a book, I can only handle like a little portion at a time. Like I'll know the whole arc kind of, but I can't do the whole thing. So I can't do, a 10 book outline of this is what I'm going to do for the next 10 books. But what I decided to do is like I would have a plan for the first three books would have a general theme of like the main character's name is Olive, and she figures out that she's good at solving mysteries in the first three books. And I was like, okay, if the series does well, I can continue it. And so then it did. And so then like the next three books, I was like, I thought, okay, if the first three books do well, then the next three can be about her, taking on cases from family and friends. And then the next three books can be she's becoming more of a professional detective where people that she doesn't know are bringing her cases. And even just that little like organizational thing in my mind helped me figure out kind of how her arc would go. And it was enough that I could kind of stay within it and give it, had leeway enough that I could change it. And it also gave me a point that I could end it if it wasn't going well. And I didn't want readers to not be happy and wondering, oh, what happened? I left them hanging, at book four. And it really that arc needed two more books, to close out. So that to me has helped me a lot when I think about a series now. I think, okay, three books, and then we'll see where we're going from here.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a great answer.
So I think we've done a good job on the series front.
Yeah.
So let's say our series is written. Now it's time to get out of the world. And one of the biggest challenges we all face as writers, and especially if we go down the independent route, is getting it out there and finding the right people. So, Jamie, this is your area of expertise.
Well, I was fortunate. You said you need to write the book and then marketing comes. And I would sort of disagree with you on that because I think you need to think about marketing when you're writing your book. And because you need to be thinking about who this book is for. The worst thing anybody can say to me when I'm doing consulting is, if I ask them, well, what genre does your book fall in, or something like that, and they say, well, it's like nothing anyone's ever read before, and I'm like, oh, dang it, that's not good, because it needs to be readers like similar but different. They like the familiar. And so when you're writing, it needs to be similar enough to the other books in the genre you're writing in for them to be comfortable, and then different enough that they go, oh, that's fun. And that's tricky, that's hard. But so when you're writing, you need to be thinking about who am I writing for? I would also say building a newsletter before you release 100% will change the trajectory of your writing career. I was able to do that with just a preview of my book. And I had 1,200 people on my newsletter before the book released. And I knew that at least those 1,200 people wanted my book. If no one else bought it, those 1,200 people were interested in my book. But what happened was because they were the right readers, they were rom-com readers. When they started buying the book, it populated my also bots with the other rom-com books that they had written. And that told Amazon who to send my book to. So it told them, told Amazon to send my book to other rom-com readers. And because of that, that book stayed very sticky at between 1,000 and 3,000 in the in the Amazon store for 6 months until the second book came out. And then, I mean, it continued, but without anything from me except some very small ads, it stayed in that space because Amazon was delivering it to the right people and showing it to the right people. So really understanding genre, understanding reader expectations within that genre while you're writing is so important because once you, then you can present this book to those readers and say, this is exactly what you want. This is exactly what you want. And know that you're fulfilling that promise.
So do you kind of hone in on similar books that are popular or similar authors, like the
Yeah, I
comparison?
mean, I know what they do. I don't, don't think I copied them, but I understand what they're doing. Like I'll look at their blurbs and I'll adjust my blurbs to the blurbs in the top 50. If, especially the top 20, if my blurb doesn't look like theirs or have the same sort of tone as theirs, then I adjust it because I know that's what readers are looking for. And I've changed my blurbs multiple times, mostly because of that, because things change. Like when I started writing back in 2017, when I put out Running from a Rockstar, I wrote that book in third person, close POV. So, but now most romances and rom-coms are written in first person, usually first person present, but first person past is pretty common too. So the later books that I wrote, the new series is written in first person.
Nice.
So
And did you notice a difference then?
no, I don't notice a difference at all. I mean, and people will even say, I didn't realize your book was third person because it's very close POV. And so I don't think people really notice it. Also, like Lucy Score, who is very big in my genre, she writes a lot of her books still in third person. So, it just depends.
Yeah, I would say romance changes so much faster, I think, than a lot of other genres. So I don't think I've changed. I've updated my blurbs over time. I'll go back and look at them and think, oh, that's these can be tightened up. But I haven't changed the, but mystery seems to be pretty standard. Whereas I think romance, like romance covers have changed quite a bit. Now they're much more illustrated, right? And so you have to keep more of an eye on that, I think, than I do.
Yeah, I do, and probably even more than like fantasy. Fantasy's pretty much, I don't know that it changes that much.
Certain
I read a
subgenres,
lot of
I'd say,
fantasy, so I don't
yeah.
know that it, I haven't noticed a lot of changes in the way the stories are told. But yeah, so that's really the biggest thing I think I would tell people for marketing is like when you first start writing, you're kind of just writing. You don't know, but before you, I mean, as you're refining that book, do it with the reader in mind because we're not writing for us, we're writing for our reader, and we are not our reader. And that is a big thing to remember too, that things that may turn us off, like email lists, we don't like to, I don't want emails, I don't want people sending me emails. Well, that's not how your reader feels. If your reader signs up for your newsletter, they want to hear from you. That's important. And so because of that, you need to be sending an email regularly. And as everyone will tell you, your email list is your most valued tool because it is, I've sent out thousands of emails over the last almost 8 years or 8 years. And every time I send out an email, I sell books every time. And so, and there are people that have been on my list since 2017. So it's, you can't just assume because someone is on your email list or in your Facebook group that they've read all your books.
Yeah,
They
people see
probably
things at
haven't.
different times, don't they?
Yeah, they
Yeah,
do. Yeah.
and so e email plays a central role in and what you do. So have you got any advice for anyone who's looking to grow their email list?
I would say offer the best thing that I've ever done to grow my list is offer, like in romance, a second epilogue. So at the end of my first book, it's, the book ends. I don't put the end.
Oh, nice,
I
nice.
tell people never put the end. You skip down a, you come down a space or two spaces. You can put a little scene break, like I do three asterisks sometimes, but sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just come down and it says at the end of the first book, if you wanna know what happens to Scarlett and Gavin a year later, click here. It involves a hot rock star, a naked trip to the barn, and the Baptist preacher. And who's not gonna click that? So they click, and to get that extra, and it is just a scene, it's a 1500 word scene. To get that, they have to give me their email list. And they know that. I mean, it's clear. And I
Nice,
use
that's very good.
BookFunnel for that. So I've used second epilogues. I've used deleted scenes. My deleted scenes have always done really well for
Nice.
growing my email list. And those are things we already have. Just if you delete something, never throw it away. Stick it in a folder because you can use it later.
That's a really nice idea. I've never seen anyone use the deleted scenes, but you're given something extra that you're not getting anywhere else. So it's good
And
that, yeah.
if you said, like for me in the book that I use it, it have you, that I use it in, I there's they talk about what happened at the wedding. Well, what? Oh, let's not talk about it. They allude to what happened to the wedding all throughout the book, and I had written it, but to use it, I would have had to do a pretty big flashback, and I don't like flashbacks, so I chose to take it out and just talk about it. And they eventually talk about some of what happened, but you get to see the whole thing in the deleted scene.
Nice.
So people really like that. Research material. I know a lot of historical authors will use research material, maps. What are some other things?
Well, I was going to say, like for cozies, like recipes, if you give away
Oh yeah,
recipes or
recipes.
little, some people do like a little cookbook of different things from the stories. For me, I've focused more on giveaways to get readers. And I mean, you could, do this at the back of the book too. You could drive people to a page where they can sign up and you could have a continual giveaway. I did that for a while where you could sign up and you could get a get being entered in this giveaway that I think once a month I was giving away the box set, ebook box set. But I've done a lot of like Goodreads giveaways, library thing giveaways, just to get the word out. So that's like more towards like you, I was trying to draw people to the series. So I once I had several books, I would do a giveaway and just give away book one for free to get people in and get them on my list. In exchange, if you sign up for my list, you can get, a free download of this book. You can do that with a short story too. I did a short story for a while until I had more books in the series because I did the same thing with, there's a little throwaway line about, well, Olive is very clever. She figured out that thing with Lady Sophia's sapphires. And so I have this little short story, Lady Sophia's Sapphires, and it's kind of how, like, her first unofficial case, so people would read that in book one and then they would think, oh, I want to get on the list. So I could use that as a at the end of the book, for people to sign up to get to find out this story that they hadn't wasn't included in the main story, or I could do it as a giveaway, in the beginning to get people, give them the short story to get them to buy the book. And then later I just switch to giving away the book because I feel like that's an even better giveaway is if you give away a whole book.
I have a I have a free novella on my website that I give away for people to sign up as well. So if you go to my website, it says if you want a free book, then you can click here. And so to get it, they have to sign up. Well, I had a book that I didn't have a second epilogue. I was actually pretty sick of those characters by the time I finished, and I didn't want to write anything about them anymore. So I offered the free novella at the end of the book because new people to me would not have seen that novella. And so it was just a way to use it in two places. So yeah, you can do that. I've done, the book funnel, newsletter builders. Those are great too. I think that the readers coming from there are not just there for the freebie. They're pretty good. There are some others that we've used. But yeah, so I think that those are just good ways to get people on your list. And I will say this. So at the end of my book, you've got the, hey, go read this novella. And then right after that, no scene break, no nothing. Just if you want to read the first chapter of the next book, click here. And it takes them, or keep reading. And so it takes it, they can read the first chapter of the next book. And at the end of that, there's the buy link or the pre-order link for the next book.
Nice.
But if they click away and go read my second epilogue, they probably aren't going to come back to the book to read this first chapter. So at the end of my second epilogue, I have the first chapter of the next book with the pre-order link and buy link in that, so that they don't have to click back, but I'm still getting them to click that pre-order link, whether they go one place or the other. So,
Nice. It's like creating a little ecosystem,
yeah,
little
it
reading
is.
ecosystem. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So something else that is quite I find quite interesting is rather than the idea of promoting books is the idea of building your author brand. Because at the end of the day, it's you that are
Yeah.
writing the books. It's the reader who sort of attaches themselves to yourself.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this sort of idea of creating an author brand, and how would you recommend writers go about sort of developing that?
Well, this is what I say about brand. Your brand is the promise you're making your reader. And if your brand does not fulfill that promise, then you've let your reader down. So if I'm telling my readers that I write sexy swoonies, pee your pants funny, small town rom-coms, and I don't deliver that, then I don't know. I mean, then I've lost their trust and I've lost them as a reader. So I feel like that is the first thing you need to remember, is that your brand is your promise. So whatever your, and if you promise this as an author, you deliver that in every book that you write. Now, does that mean you are stuck in one genre? Not necessarily, because I'm right now writing a book outside of rom-com. It's not even a romance. It's a women's fiction or maybe even a book club fiction book. But it is, it's Steel Magnolias and Dukes of Hazzard had a baby. This book would be that. So it's still funny. It's still swoony in some ways. It's still very emotional. And so I will have to change my kind of tagline branding, because I'm not going to change my name. No, I'm going to keep it under my name, because I think it's close enough that it's still, I still fulfill the promise of giving readers an emotional, funny book that kind of hits all the feels. So, but you need to think about that. And you just need to think about what is the promise you're making your reader. And then after you've decided what that promise is, you just fulfill it every time you write. And you fulfill it every time you write anything, a Facebook post, your newsletter, a social media, a TikTok or Instagram, all of those things should fall in line under that promise that you've made your reader.
Nice. It's a good, very good philosophy.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about that?
I would add, you probably want to think about visuals, and I am not good at graphics and things like that. I took a course one time pretty recently, and one of the things that was so helpful to me was there was this, one of the exercises was make a list of words that describe your tone, your style, what you want to convey, and then find images that show that. And that was so hard, because a word like for me, my books, I feel like they're puzzling, they're atmospheric, they're lighthearted. elegant. You know, I want to appeal to that type of reader who wants that, and that's what my visuals had to show. And I found some images and I showed them. You know, we were in like a Zoom thing, and the woman looked at them and she said, "Okay, these are too dark. If your books are lighthearted, and mystery, you know, tends to ever, you know, they tend to have like a darker cast, or it's like got the crime scene tape and blood spatter." She was like, "You want to go bright and light." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So once I understood that, then I could apply that even in my amateur efforts. And then I could tell people who were creating graphics for me, you know, it needs to be light and bright, and to show that that's the tone. And I think that's, and I carry that across everything. So I've done the 1920s mysteries, and I've done a spin-off that's set in Egypt. Those are my most recent books, and they still have that really bright, colorful feel to them, even though they're a different main character. My readers will look at that and they'll go, "Okay, this is similar to what she's written before." Even though it's slightly different, it's still the same tone, and the visually, it lets them, I think it makes them feel comfortable. So I think if you can figure out like what images and colors, perhaps shades, convey what you want, that can really help. And it helps when I'm creating something or looking at different things, I can go, "Okay, not this, not this, not this, but yes, this one. These are too dark. These are lighter. These are brighter. Let's go with these." It just, I need that kind of A or B. Eliminate these to help me.
And things like that help give you guardrails as you're writing, because if you are find yourself veering off and crashing through those guardrails to go darker or whatever, then you maybe one haven't understood what you know what your brand is, and two, you might need to veer pull it back onto the road and get it between those guardrails again. So it can help you when you're writing.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic bit of advice. And one I've never tried, and that's something I am going to try, is to write that list of words and see if it matches the
See what you come up
expectation.
with.
Because I have a feeling mine's too dark as well.
Maybe. Well, I mean, it can be dark if that's the kind of thing you're
I do
writing,
like
but
dark fantasy, yeah, so that's okay. I get away with it a bit. Well, thank you very much, Julian, sir. It's been absolutely fantastic chatting with you both, and you've shared some fantastic insights.
Great.
It's all different sides of writing. It's ridiculous how much we've got to know.
I know. It's terrible.
It's crazy, but it's nice to bring in the perspectives from other genres, which are really popular at the moment, and to hear how you are adapting to sort of your readers' expectations, which they do change an awful lot. So it's fantastic, and thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for
Yeah,
having
thanks.
us. Yeah,
Well,
it's been great.
where's the best place to, if anyone wants to learn more about you and your books, where's the best place for them to go?
For me, it is, I'm on Amazon. I'm in KU, and all my books are in KU on Amazon. My website is jamiealbright.com, and that's J-A-M-I, no E. So jamiealbright.com. And I also do author consulting. So there's on my website, it says author consulting or author services, something like that. If you click on that, you can book a session with me. I'd love to help.
Nice. So,
And my website is sararosette.com. It's just sararosett.com. If you want to buy my books, I have a bookstore, which is sararosettebooks.com.
nice.
If you're interested in the series book, that's available everywhere. I'm wide with all my books. So if you want 1920s books, if you want the How to Write a Series, that's available. It's also available in audiobook and also in libraries. So you can find it there, like in Hoopla or something like that. And don't forget the podcast, Wish I'd Known Then, where you can find us. So we have a lot of things where we're different, like Jamie's in KU and I'm wide, and we talk about a lot of different things, the different ways to do things, and the differences in writing our different genres. So that's
And
Wish
we
I'd Known
talk,
Then.
yeah, we talk to a lot of authors, very successful authors and authors that have just started out, and about what they wish they'd known and how, and industry professionals about what they wish they'd known about working with authors. So yeah,
And
it's
what they wish authors knew. about their platforms.
There
There you
So
go.
yeah,
Lots to
we
learn. And like I say, it's nice to see the contrasting approaches, because you say the more experiments writers try and they test the waters to see what works, the more we all learn. It's great. It's a great idea. So thank
It
you very much again. And
You're welcome.
thank you everyone at home for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the show.